The following Cruise Addicts talk show is a production of Cruise Radio.
Welcome aboard to Cruise Radio, your home port for everything cruising and more. Subscribe to our newsletter and weekly radio show at cruiseradio.net.
From the Cruise One Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Matt Bassford.
And I'm Doug Parker. Follow us on Twitter at Cruise Radio. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/cruiseradio. And sign up for our monthly newsletter at cruiseradio.net.
About a week ago or so, we had brought up premium content from Cruise Radio. And we were hoping to get it to you this week, but we realize combing through the archives, there's a lot of stuff. Basically, we'd be offering the unedited versions of the interviews, some stuff that didn't make it to the show, but really giving you access to pretty much everything.
The best part of it all is whenever we release the premium content, we're going to give you a 7-day free trial, and then after that, you'll have an introductory price of $1.99 a month.
$1.99 a month?
That's what I said.
So jump on it quickly, because the price will go up sometime after the first of the year. Again, we will let you know. It's going to happen soon. We'll release this premium content, and you'll see it all right there when it does come out there at cruiseradio.net.
On this show, travel expert and columnist for foxbusiness.com, Paul Motter, talks to us about the out-of-the-ordinary travel to the North and South Pole.
But first, we're so happy to have him back. He's been in Jamaica for a little bit. Mr. Stuart Sheeran, the cruise guy.
Hey, Matt and Doug. How's it going?
Hey, man.
What's the latest with the port development in Falmouth?
Well, I was on Royal Caribbean's Liberty of the Seas for part of last week, and decided I wanted to either get off in Jamaica or in Grand Cayman, so I figured Jamaica was a great place to get off. So I wanted to see the pier that Royal Caribbean was building in Falmouth, because I don't know anybody that knows anything about what, you know, Falmouth, Jamaica is all about. And, you know, Ocho Rios is really not on anyone's, you know, top ports to stop in. So it was interesting, you know, why Royal Caribbean was spending so much money to develop a port there. And, man, was I pleasantly surprised, one, by the warm hospitality that was definitely extended toward me. But let me tell you, after seeing the port by air, we actually flew from the ship in a helicopter along the northern coast heading west toward Montego Bay. That, you know, Falmouth is in between Ocho Rios and Montego Bay. A little closer to the Montego Bay section of the island. But the port itself is actually going to be multi-use. So whether there's a ship there or not, the port area is going to be actually have a lot of activity. There's going to be shops. There's going to be restaurants. They're building a hotel there. And there's also going to be people living there. They're going to have townhomes. And it's really going to be very nice.
Huh,
so it's going to be a hopping area. But what's really cool is that Falmouth itself is just pouring with history. It is the largest area in the Caribbean with intact Georgian architecture buildings, you know, dating, you know, it's, you know, 250 to 300 years old.
Yeah.
And they're intact. I mean, they're in the midst of what's called a renaissance. They're refurbishing. But the history of the area, Falmouth, the port there, was actually during the, I guess, the late mid-1700s, when it was the largest area of, it was like a staging area for slavery. So the slaves came in from Africa, went to Jamaica, and then they dispersed from there. So one of the things that the mayor of Falmouth was telling me, they were thinking about building a slave museum to educate people about the important historical significance there. But and then they also took us to the Good Hope Estate that was once owned by John Tharp, who was the largest, one of the largest plantation owners, and the staple crop there was sugar cane, which of course they used to make rum, and Falmouth was the port that they used to export these goods. And they are going to be taking this estate, which is about 2,300 acres, and they're creating like a staging area for visitor center. So the cruise passengers are going to come up to the estate, and then from there they're going to be able to go horseback riding. And they're going to be able to go on ATVs and hiking trails, and it's all these hills, little tiny valleys, and it's gorgeous. It's absolutely breathtaking. Culinary excursions.
That's it.
So the point is it's going to be able to offer a lot of history, a lot of, you know, ways for people to immerse themselves in the early stages of the Western Hemisphere's development, and also be able to, you know, go to Dunn's River Falls, which will be 45 minutes away in Ocho Rios, or, you know, take a, you know, view the Martha Bray River, which is right there. So it's going to be very exciting for cruise passengers. So it's not what I call a dum-dum port.
Right.
Like Costa Maya,
mm-hmm.
which there's absolutely no conceivable reason for its existence.
Yes.
So this is actually going to be very educational.
Yeah.
And they're going to have so many cool tours that it's a place you're going to want to go to.
Cool.
You know, we were with the people from the Jamaican Tourist Board,
uh-huh.
you know, the mayor of Falmouth. We had the owners of the Good Hope Estate, the port director for Falmouth, the director of the Historical Society. So we had a really good collection of people. Just what's really nice is that no one's going to promote it more than Jamaica itself. And, you know, was it safe? Yes. Was it clean? Yes. They definitely have a lot of work. But this actually, I think that Falmouth actually has the potential of becoming one of the very best ports of call in the entire Caribbean.
Okay, but Stuart, all this sounds good, what you're talking about, and it's going to be, you know, great for tourism and stuff, but how far are we away from this actually being done? Looking at the latest pictures here on USA Today, it still looks like it has a long way to go.
Well, I think those pictures were dated. They were actually taken from the Jamaican newspaper and on cruiseradio.net. I think we'll be able to post some updated pictures of what's going on because they've made significant strides. The first ships, actually, Holland America's Rhinedam is going to be the first ship in November to call. I'd say the core of the pier
mm-hmm.
is really not going to be ready, very much. But I could tell you the town is really going to be working hard to create a nice staging area. So what happens is the passengers will come off the ship, come through the gates. And they're going to whisk them away to a really very nice shopping area, which is about 10 to 15 minutes away, complimentary, or they'll be able to do these different tours.
Okay, so relatively soon, then.
Okay, so with this new port being built, are we going to see cruise ships pulling out of Ocho Rios, or is that going to still remain as well?
Well, the reason that Royal Caribbean has undertaken this is that Ocho Rios would not be able to accommodate the Oasis-class ships. So they needed a longer, bigger pier. And another problem that Ocho Rios is having, believe it or not, is that they've got a space problem, which is why Holland America and P&O are having to use Falmouth at the very beginning. Royal Caribbean won't start in there with Oasis until March. But, there's just so much room. You know, there's so many piers in Ocho Rios that they're going to have to move to these other piers. So it's going to take some business away that would have been there, but Ocho Rios will pick up with other ships. I think really what's happening here, guys, is that the cruise lines are continuing to have to almost redevelop or recreate new opportunities in the Caribbean. Sometimes they're going to be successful, which I think Falmouth is going to be one. I think the Turks and Caicos is another good example, but I think a big flop has been Costa Maya. I mean, it's a major flop, and so instead of having to go to Costa Maya, the passengers will be able to go to Falmouth, and I think a lot of people are going to want to go there. But the cruise lines, in order to create future growth, are going to have to create new ports and new excursions and offer new adventures, because a lot of people have cruised, and there's only so many times you can go back to the same place and do the same thing over and over again.
All right, moving on to Cruise West, which is no more.
Well, that's a shame. That was a really neat niche cruise line that essentially was, they offered you some really nice experiences in Alaska where the ships were small enough and could get close enough that, to the glaciers that you could almost reach off the deck and grab some ice for a drink. It's a shame. It was a very, really niche, operator that a lot of people just really enjoyed. They offered smaller, more intimate ships. But unfortunately, the economy just wasn't allowing them to charge maybe the high prices that they needed to survive. They weren't able to restructure. They thought they'd be able to maybe find an investor. It didn't work. And so unfortunately, they not only, after suspending future sales, this past weekend, they ceased total operations, which is a shame.
Does travel insurance help in cases like this? I mean, I'm assuming they're like, well, I mean, do they let the people finish their cruise, or do they just stop in one port and they're like, get off?
Well, that actually, Matt, that's a great question, and there were passengers that were on the what was supposed to be the longest world cruise. It was a 335-day around the world cruise, but unfortunately, it concluded in Newfoundland in Canada, and they actually made the passengers get off because the ship was actually sold from, out from under them. So they had to get off. You know, what happens, you know, to the remaining amounts of money that they paid? What about the passengers, you know, that put down deposits or final paid for upcoming future cruises for this year and next? You know, unfortunately, you know, hopefully people did take out insurance. This is another example of why insurance is so important, and also to check on...
Because you never know when the cruise line is going out of business.
Well...
Never know.
Well, you do never know, but when you always look at, let's say, some third-party insurance companies like Travel Guard, like CSA, Travel Protection, and if they're not offering default insurance on the supplier, you know there's a problem. Because they've got policies that do cover supplier default. May not be offered by the cruise line itself, which is another reason why it's very important to check to make sure that the insurance covers supplier default, because a lot of policies don't cover it. But this is also, you know, besides the travel insurance, this is why you pay by credit card. Because you can go back to the credit card company and deny payment, and see what kind of recourse you have in that direction.
And some good news coming out of Europe for the Lore of the Seas that passed its first sea trials, right?
It's very exciting. Friday, it returned after a few days at sea, and, you know, testing everything. And the ship performed, you know, better than expected. The ship is allegedly, you know, way ahead of schedule and doing very well with the, you know, being prepared, which is great.
But, Stuart, whenever you say sea trials, what do they do when they take it out there to test it?
They're actually taking the ship out for a spin. It's out in the open water, and they are testing its acceleration. They're going from side to side. They're using the spoilers. They're checking the mechanics of the ship to make sure that the ship is seaworthy.
They're doing reverse serpentines through buoys.
Exactly.
So just kicking the tires then.
Sure. That's exactly what they're doing.
Cool.
Before we wrap up, we want to get one final look from the Weather Center with Chief Meteorologist Stuart Chiron. What's the latest in the Bermuda Triangle?
Well, Matt, thanks for bringing this up. This is a very important topic, and it does look like Tropical Storm Julia is coming back for round two.
Okay, great. Thanks. Meteorologist Stuart Chiron, the cruise guy, will be back later in the show with your hot deals.
If you missed any part of the show or want to hear more, go to cruiseradio.net and click on Radio Channel, or go to iTunes and search Cruise Radio. Follow us on Twitter at Cruise Radio.
If you missed any part of the show or want to hear more, go to cruiseradio.net and click on Radio Channel, or go to iTunes and search Cruise Radio. You can follow Cruise Radio on Twitter at Cruise Radio.
Very glad to have back with us once again, travel aficionado and editor of CruiseMates.com, Mr. Paul Motter. Welcome back to Cruise Radio.
Thank you.
Now, we can see your articles every week, by the way, at FoxBusiness.com. And one recent one you have there is Polar Opposites Icy Expedition Cruises, talking about the Arctic Circle and also Antarctica, I guess visits to the North and South Pole. But before we get into that, want to quickly get your take on the whole Cruise West going out of business situation. We talked with Stuart earlier about that. What's your take?
Well, talk about expedition cruises. Cruise West was one of the leading expedition cruise lines, and they had 9 ships, most of them in the range of about 100 to 200 passengers. And it's a really sad thing, because a lot of people who probably put deposits down on cruises are probably not going to get refunds on those cruises. Now, we don't know how many that will affect yet, but that's just what I'm guessing based on what I know so far.
Yeah, because not too terribly long ago, we had spoken with the president and CEO of Cruise West, Dietmar Wertanzel, and he was, you know, gung-ho about, what was it, Doug?
Oh, they were really excited about their new world cruises coming up and all that stuff, but I guess those won't be anymore either, huh?
Oh, yeah, they canceled the world cruise. I believe they were in Newfoundland, and the funny thing about that is the cruise started in Singapore, and had it made it to a U.S. port, a lot of more people might have gotten refunds for that cruise, but since it never touched a U.S. port, it's not eligible for some of the bond agencies that make refunds for cruisers.
Because that's not shady at all,
no.
You know? So, Paul, did they basically just say, okay, look, we're in Newfoundland, we're out of business, get off the ship?
Yeah, they did basically say that.
Hell,
yeah,
man.
They just told everybody to pack up and call their credit card providers and hope to get a refund.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's not a nice thing when cruise lines go out of business.
No, not so much. All right, let's get to your article, Polar Opposites, Icy Expedition Cruises. I think for most people outside of going to Alaska or someplace like that, people don't generally think of taking a cruise to the Arctic Circle or Antarctica.
Right. Well, they generally don't call them cruises because they don't generally cater to the average cruise audience.
Right.
But they do call them expeditions, which they really are. When you are in a polar region, you are under the same conditions that scientists are under when they're up there, you know, studying whatever they study up there. And the conditions can be really quite harsh, surprisingly.
Yeah. What kind of clothes are you packing? I mean, is it as harsh and brutal as it sounds up there or down there?
Well, it can be. The trick is to have completely waterproof clothing from head to toe. You want to have a parka with a hood, and it has to seal around your neck. And then you also have to have waterproof pants that are going to go over your waterproof boots. And you want the Wellington-style boots, not the other kind. As long as you can stay dry, you should stay fairly warm. But we actually had a problem on one expedition I was on where we did all get soaked when we were in a Zodiac, and it was very, very painful.
So, Paul, what is the difference between the North Pole and the South Pole?
Except for the fact that one's north and one's south.
Okay, smartass.
Right. Well, they really are polar opposites in almost every way. It's almost kind of like a Superman Bizarro world.
Yeah.
In the North Pole, you have mammals like polar bears, muskox, Arctic foxes, and they happen to live on the ice pack, which doesn't have any land. The entire Arctic Circle is actually one large ocean, the Arctic Ocean, which is almost 3 miles deep at the North Pole.
Jeez
now,
Louise.
The Antarctica is the opposite. It's a huge landmass with mountains, and it almost completely fills the Antarctic Circle, but it's surrounded by water, whereas the Arctic is surrounded by land, and it's a huge ocean. And now down in Antarctica, you generally don't have any land mammals or land predators at all. You have a vast millions of penguins. The Antarctica is all about penguins. And then the only other animal life you have are sea life, such as sea lions and killer whales, orca, things like that.
And when's the best time to travel to each pole?
The first easy answer is that late summer is best for both regions. You don't want to go too early because the animals won't really be doing their thing yet. But on the other hand, if you want to see a specific animal, say a certain kind of penguin chick, for example, you want to go at the time when you know they'll be out because they have a definite breeding cycle.
I'm guessing Christmas time's not the best time for the North Pole travel. Is that right?
Probably not.
Yeah.
In fact, even June is not the best time.
I found that
July and August are the best times.
Because of all the elves working very hard.
Right.
Is it that right?
That's correct.
Yes. I'm an idiot.
Paul, if you could, tell us where you would fly into to catch one of these cruises. Also, what kind of ships are you on? Because they're not the big Caribbean ship, I would imagine.
Well, in Antarctica, you fly into Ushuaia, Argentina, which is the southernmost city in the world. And yes, you do board smaller vessels. In Antarctica, they prohibited larger cruise ships from landing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go down into Antarctica on a larger cruise ship, but you're not going to be able to land and sashay with the penguins.
Mm.
You need the largest group they allow to land in Antarctica is 100 guests plus the guides. So you're going to go on a smaller vessel. Now, I've actually seen cruise lines like Oceania are going as far north as north of Svalbard. They will go up and actually give you a view of the Arctic ice cap, which is very far north.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is in the Arctic, you can get as far north as about 82 degrees, whereas Antarctica, you're not going to get much farther south than about 66 degrees. That's a huge difference.
And I'm sorry, where are you flying into with the Arctic Circle?
The best thing to do is actually fly into Svalbard and spend your entire 1 week to 10-day expedition in the archipelago.
Right.
You can alternately fly into Norway. and cruise up there, but there's not much to see on the way there.
What's the average length of these expeditions?
10 days is the average length.
And a rough cost? What are we looking
at? From about $5,000 to $10,000 and up.
Per person. Dang.
Yes.
I mean, it all just very exciting and intriguing to me, even though most people just think it's a bunch of ice.
There are many nuances. If you like the beauty of the ice in Alaska, you'll probably prefer Antarctica because there's more big ice down there. In the polar region, the ice is actually fairly flat and not dramatic like it is down south.
When you go on these trips, Paul, there's not like excursions per se like a normal cruise, is there? It's basically everyone's doing the same thing?
It's an expedition.
Okay.
You have to be ready for anything at any time. Now, the key is sighting wildlife, and wildlife is not on any kind of schedule. They
right.
don't read the Daily Compass. So you really literally have to be ready to grab your jacket and get into a skiff on a moment's notice. I'm sorry, skiff. They use Zodiacs, not skiffs. But you have to be ready to get in that Zodiac, and you will stay in that Zodiac for almost the entire excursion until you land.
Right.
Land tours are not that extensive. They tend to be, you tend to be driven around in the Zodiacs and see different elements of ice and you know, wildlife.
Are the expeditions included in the cost of the cruise, or is that an extra fee as well?
No, they generally are included completely.
Okay.
I would hope so, for between $5,000 and $10,000.
Yeah, right.
Are there any day trips available where you can visit these scientific research centers and kind of see what they're doing down there?
Chuck told me about one research station that's a popular stop, but it's not a working research station anymore. It's been closed down and turned into a research station museum.
Because that's where they're predicting the meteors that are going to end the world. That's when they're figuring all that out, or some major seismic activity that will destroy the Earth. That's where that's going on.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes, Tommy Lee Jones, Will Smith, they're all working on that.
No, they don't actually let you down there where the people are doing the research.
Right.
But the expedition leaders want you to think they're like those scientists, you know,
right.
while you're down there. They sort of command a lot of respect. And so they will definitely embarrass you if you ask a stupid question. Well, you know, the Russians actually took a submersible and went down to the bottom of the Arctic Ocean and planted a flag right at the North Pole, 3 miles underneath the ocean.
Is that right?
Yeah, there's a lot of claiming of territory going on in both areas, and so that's how the Russians did it. They planted their flag right at the North Pole.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Well, it's always great to talk to and get your info. He is a travel aficionado and editor of CruiseMates.com. You can find this article entitled Polar Opposites, Icy Expedition Cruises, and see his other articles every week at foxbusiness.com. He is Paul Motter. Thanks so much for being with us again, Paul.
My pleasure.
Each episode, we highlight Porthole Cruise Magazine's Picks of the Week. If your upcoming Caribbean cruise happens to call on Key West anytime between October 22nd through October 31st, you might want to forego the Island Trolley Tour for a chance to take part in Key West's annual Fantasy Fest. The theme this year, by the way, is Habitat for Insanity. And if you've ever experienced this annual 10-day Halloween celebration, you know it's just a pretty appropriate title.
Locals and visitors alike come out in droves to take part in parades, contests, festivals, and other events. From the tame, family-friendly Goombay Street Party to the not-so-tame Pimp and Ho Exotic Dance Party hosted by Rod Jeremy. I mean, need we say more?
Awesome. Other events include a pet masquerade and parade, Sloppy Joe's 27th annual Toga Party, the Fantasy Fest Street Fair, and the Captain Morgan Fantasy Fest Parade. You can check out the whole schedule of events at fantasyfest.net.
Have you been dreaming lately about a romantic tropical cruise to the Caribbean?
Cruise One. Or how about a breathtaking scenic cruise to Alaska?
Cruise One.
Or how about the Mexican Riviera?
Or Cancun.
Cozumel.
Or New England.
Or Canada.
Or Italy.
Or Greece.
Or the Far East. Or how about a cruise around the whole world?
One. Got a dream vacation for you.
Cruise One.
Let us send you on your way.
Cruise One.
Number one in cruising
nationwide. Cruise One.
Yeah.
Cruise One.
Cruise One.
One has more than 550 cruise specialists nationwide ready to help you plan your dream cruise. And speaking with a local Cruise One expert is as easy as calling toll-free 1-800-CRUISE and the number one. That's 1-800-CRUISE-1 or find us online at cruiseone.com.
Number one in cruising nationwide.
Stuart Shear on the Cruise Guy is back with us again with your hot deals. What you got, baby?
Well, this past week, some really interesting deals popped up. There's some really good fall deals for Royal Caribbean's Liberty of the Seas, which is here only temporarily because in 2011 she will be heading to the Mediterranean. But for those campers looking for some good Caribbean deals, they've got some great pricing from starting from only $599 per person for those lovely 160,000-ton ships with the Flow Rider.
Nice.
Or if you're looking for something a little different, Holland America's got a great sale going on Eurodam or Westerdam, doing seven-night Eastern or, you ready for this?
Yep.
For the first time, a seven-night Southern Caribbean cruise. Going from, to give you an idea of the itineraries, you got Fort Lauderdale, Grand Turk, San Juan, St. John, St. Thomas, and St. Martin, as well as their private island called Half Moon Cay.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go to Half Moon Cay, Aruba, and Curacao.
Nice.
And what's really nice is for the October through February sailings, they've got pricing as low as, ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Starting at $399 per person.
For 7 nights.
For 7 nights.
Too cool.
Now, what's really nice about this is that they've got a great deal on third and fourth passengers, and the pricing starts from free.
So free?
Free. It could be $99 per person on select sailings, but, it's a great opportunity to experience Holland America. They've got some very good kids programs on these ships, but the Westerdam's itinerary, it's the first time that you're going to get a seven-night cruise to the Southern Caribbean out of Fort Lauderdale, which is great news to have.
Too cool.
Another great Caribbean deal, Celebrity's Eclipse begins sailing November 20th, doing seven-night Eastern and Western Caribbean out of Miami. But her sister ship, the Solstice, is there right now, and both ships have fall and winter Caribbean pricing starting from just $599. And what's really nice is the balconies, which 85% of those two ships are ocean view balconies. Those are only starting from about another $150 more.
Hmm.
So, it's a great opportunity to get that balcony on a five-star ship. And if you're looking for Europe, there's going to be some really good deals in November, as well as January, February, and March. NCL's Norwegian Jade is doing 12-night Mediterranean round trip out of Barcelona, visiting Rome, which the port is Civitavecchia. Then it's going to Athens, Izmir, Turkey. It's going to overnight in Alexandria, Egypt, so you can see the museums in Cairo and the pyramids in Giza, as well as Valletta, Malta. And the prices are starting from only $22.99, and that includes round-trip air as well as two-nights hotel in Barcelona.
Nice.
So some really good deals out there.
Right on, right on. Stuart Shear on the Cruise Guy can be found at cruiseguy.com. Thank you so much for all of that. Now, next episode, we're going to talk to Sherry Laskin, who is also known as Cruise Maven on Twitter, but she actually took a European vacation.
Yeah, for like 2 months.
Yeah, and didn't even take a single flight. She took a transatlantic across and did buses and trains.
Trains and river cruises. Yeah, yeah, it's cool. Also next week, Stuart Shear on the Cruise Guy back with more cruise news and commentary.
You know, you can always follow us on Twitter at Cruise Radio.
You could Facebook us, facebook.com/cruiseradio. And while you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter at cruiseradio.net.
From the Cruise One studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Matt Basford.
And I'm Doug Parker.
And this is Cruise Radio. The proceeding was a presentation of Cruise Addicts.